WMFO Medford.
Fenway's all aglow. A book night after lands down the street. Guitar in hand and summer heat. The faithful in their red and blue. A crowd outside the house of blues. A dodge of vendors, hawkers, gawkers, stalkers in my way. Breaking strings on. Close my eyes, pretend we're stars. Cross that and it seems so far, but tonight it could all be ours. The salmon brought his heart to play. The doorman lands a smile. On till then, here we will remain with our strength, rain, singing ways.
You're listening to What's Happening here on WMFO in Medford. I'm Aaron.
I'm Mike.
I'm Daryl.
My name's Don White.
We lost a great entertainer this week, so...
Well, here come two people I know you're going to be crazy about, but don't go by me. I voted for Tom Dewey. And even didn't get elected. Well, you know them as the co-stars of the Dick Van Dyke Show, Maury Amsterdam.
Frank Lloyd Wrong. And look at the people. I thought they were painted on, Mike.
Oh, they wonderful.
Look at the tan on that. I had a tan like that. I got in a crap game. I just faded and faded.
This audience is beautiful. It's like a lovely garden of flowers.
I see a little crabgrass here. I got a problem. Well, that's pretty obvious.
I bet you got the same problem I got.
Well, I certainly hope not.
Ask me what it is.
What's your problem?
Funny you should ask. Because we write material on the Van Dyke Show. You know, we're a couple of gag writers. Every place we go, people say, write me an act, write me a joke. Even the elephant. The elephant wants me to write her people jokes. I'm not joshing.
Everybody comes up to me and say, write me an act. They think just because we do that,
That's pretty dreadful.
I know what we should do.
What are we going to do?
I think we should write an act for everybody here.
Good. We'll put the whole world in show business.
Right. Everybody.
Folks, here we go. We're going to write your vaudeville act. How do we start out? We start out with he, she, joke.
He, she,
joke. You know,
joke.
He says, she says.
Okay, you be he, and I'll be she.
That's a nice now. All right,
you
he,
stop.
She, joke. He says, I have a terrible cold.
And she says, what are you doing for it?
Getting sick. I have a terrible case of the chills.
I beg your pardon.
I say I have a case of the chills.
Oh, why don't you send it to Dean Martin? He'll drink anything.
Yeah, they're going to make a movie of Dean Martin's life, but they couldn't get a liquor license.
No.
Trouble.
What did the doctor tell you to do about your cold?
He said I should drink a glass of orange juice after a hot bath.
Well, you drinking the orange juice?
I haven't finished drinking a hot bath yet. Bride and groom.
No.
Joke. Put this down for bride and groom joke. You're the bride.
I'm the bride, you're the groom?
There's a switch. Yeah.
Dear, you know I don't cook too well.
I know you're
How
a terrible
do you
cook,
fix
yes.
frankfurters?
How do you fix frankfurters? I guess the same way you fix fish.
How good. Once you clean out those weenies, there's nothing left.
Hey, Dad. Write that down, folks. Oh, your watch. Watch joke. Get ready for a watch joke. What a gorgeous watch. What time is it?
It is 8:05.
8:05, folks, in case anybody has to take a pill.
You know, there's an old Indian inscription in the back of this watch.
Who's the old Indian that gave it to you? What's it say? What's it say, an old
Repeat
Indian?
Repeat what I say.
Repeat what you say.
I gotta know. It's like a band.
It's like a band.
Anna. Now say the whole thing.
I got a nose like a banana. Hold it. Write that down.
Hey, now what?
Reader's Digest.
Reader's Digest.
Oh, that is
Those
such a
good.
Wonderful magazine. Yes, they have more cures than all the other magazines have diseases.
Yeah.
Reader's Digest. Anything that I had an uncle of mine doctored himself on a Reader's Digest for 25 years, died last night of a typographical error.
Listen, how about those titles that they put in
The titles on the articles. Dude, write this down.
I got
Title on a new article. Go.
How to give mouth-to-mouth resuscitation without becoming emotionally involved.
I got one. The world's deadliest killer. Zippers.
That's a good one. All right, how about this one? The fellow from Sing Sing wrote that article, Will the Electric Chair Correct My Posture?
My favorite. Death is nature's way of telling us to slow down.
A song.
All right, but you always have to have double songs in the act.
4 years we've been friends together.
And remember, a friend in need is a pest. Friends in all kinds of weather.
Russian weather report. Sunny tomorrow. That's an order. And we'll always be friends forever. Yes, you'll be my friend to the very end.
Have I got a telegram joke for the people who are going to go in a telegram act business? You ready? Boy, am I a big hit. Am I rich? Have discovered oil on your property. Nothing but good luck to you. Isn't that beautiful?
I don't think you read it right.
What's it say?
Have discovered oil on your property. Nothing but good luck to you.
Oh.
I just thought of something funny.
Me too. Guy walks into a drugstore owned by two old maids. Can't tell it.
In my dressing room, I left all my money.
You left all your money in the dressing room? See you later. Please, you're choking me.
So there's nothing to fear. It will not disappear as long as we're here.
Come back now, even though he said he would.
So darling, dry your eyes. So many other guys would give the world, I'm sure, to wear the shoes he wore. Oh, come on.
Smile a little smile for me, Rosemary. Whether you sit crying, in a little while you'll see. But darling, only now are you free to start again. Lift up your pretty chin, don't let those tears begin. You're a big girl now, and you'll pull through somehow. Oh, come on.
Smile a little smile for me, Rosemary. Where's the use in crying? In a little while
You listen to WMFO, Medford. This is What's Happening. We're here every Sunday from 5 to 6, bringing you a free-form show with a lot of live and local music. I am Mike.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Daryl.
Don Wayne.
Welcome, Don.
Hi. Thanks.
It's a pleasure. And we just did a brief tribute to the late, great Rosemary. She performed for 90 years out of her 94 years.
Right, she started in vaudeville, I believe, right?
As Baby Rosemary.
Right.
And, of course, you know, her great friend, who was introduced by, on the Hollywood Palace, by the one and only Groucho, Rosemary and Maury Amsterdam.
Right, so that... You know, I've spent a lot of time in my life thinking about and studying comedy. At one time, I was a stand-up, and I teach it now these days. I mean, I decided to take what I learned as a stand-up and bring it over to the sort of coffee house circuit, I guess you'd call it. But that tradition of the male and the female, you know, Nichols and May and Stiller and Mira and those guys, that's a whole genre worth studying for anybody. You know, if there's a man and a woman in a band and they're trying to fill in time between songs, it's not a bad idea to go look at what these couple comedy teams did. There's just fantastic stuff out there.
Burns and Allen,
there's so many of them. I mean, it's a unique style. One person is kind of the straight person, and the other one, you know, one person sets up the jokes, and then they change that. And yeah, it's you know, I'm really addicted to that stuff. You know, for a while, when I was thinking I was going to just do stand-up, I just watched videotape of all these people who'd started it. For a while, I spent 8 months of my life just studying silent people who did comedy without speaking, like Harpo Marx and Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton and the old Jackie Gleason show. A lot of that stuff was silent. And there was no business plan or anything. I mean, it was a bad business plan. Who, you know, imagine going to your manager and saying, you know, I think if I become a silent movie actor, I'll be good. But I learned a lot about facial expressions and body language and how to express your, how to have your body and your face and your eyebrows accentuate what you're doing. You know, so there's a, I have a lot of respect for these people that sort of got the thing that, you know, made it out of nothing, just created it, like Harpo and Groucho and W.C. Fields and all those guys.
You know, even the Three Stooges did, you know, they brought things in that weren't scripted.
Right. I'll be watching them all night tonight when I go home. That's a tradition on New Year's Eve, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think it's hosted by the Andelman Brothers.
Is that right? I'm not sure, yeah. Good stuff.
So, thank you. Little technical difficulty. So, but we're back where we need to be.
Well, I always like the storyteller. Like that bit that we heard from those guys there was jokes, was setups and punchlines, and I like that stuff a lot, and I learned from it. But what I was drawn to mostly was the storytellers, Richard Pryor, and you know, these days I like Mike Birbiglia a lot, and Patton Oswalt, and these guys who, you know, aren't joke tellers, but they're really funny, and there's a story there, and sometimes there's sadness underneath it. That's really what I was interested in. Richard Pryor really the best at that, you know, like you.
He lived it all.
And he was vulnerable, and you could see everything that was wrong with him, but he was really funny, too. And, I mean, that's very compelling to watch and to aspire to. So, you know, I gave up comedy clubs a while back because I wanted to be able to be serious a little bit, too, in the show. But I'm very grateful to that community for what it taught me, how to control the audience, you know, how to get them laughing and keep them laughing and all that. So,
well, I mean, the two most important things, I mean, laughter, you know, Reader's Digest says, you know, as Maury Amstein and Rosemary said, you know, talking about, you know, Reader's Digest, but they say laughter's the best medicine. I say the laughter's the next best medicine to chicken soup.
Well, yeah, it depends on how sick you are, I guess. you know, when people are laughing, they look like they're getting well. You know, they look like, they look younger, you know, and so I've been blessed with, you know, being able to get crowds laughing for many years now, and it's something I'm grateful for, and I stand on the shoulders of all these people who did it before.
And also the universal language of music.
Well, music's very powerful. You know, I always felt like if I do my show right, that it's a sort of, it tries to be, it doesn't always succeed, but it tries to be seamless transitions between music and comedy and storytelling and poetry and like that. And there's a few people through the years who've really mastered that, Utah Phillips and a few people that, you know, the idea of comedy not being able to stand up beside tragedy or sadness or seriousness is a new idea. Some guy with a cigar owned a club, figured that out. If we get rid of these poets, we can have a comedy club here and make more money. But nobody told Charlie Chaplin that he couldn't be sad and serious and funny within 3 minutes in the show. It's, you know, people, if they understand what they're getting and they come out, they appreciate it. You know, a movie is good if you laugh and you cry in it and all that. So I sort of have fought hard to not be pigeonholed into one thing, to be able to go back and forth.
You know, well, you brought up Charlie Chaplin. I mean, not only was he a great comedian, of course, his understudy was Stan Laurel.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. And that's how he came over. That's how a lot of his mannerisms were. Mm-hmm. But Charlie Chaplin also has a very special song out there called Smile.
Yeah, well.
And that song, everybody does it. I've heard it done.
It's a great song.
You know, I've heard it done by Steven Tyler. I've heard it done by, you name it. There's so many people that have done it. And hearing Charlie Chaplin's version is just great.
No, he's great. We were watching him last night. Last night I went to the final night of the Comedy Studio in Harvard Square. And before the show, they were showing a Charlie Chaplin movie up on the TV screen. So people were trying to talk to me, and I couldn't focus because I was watching Chaplin. Can I play a song?
Absolutely. What would you like to play?
I think I'll play a song that I wrote in the 70s called I'm From Lynn, What Can I Say, just to get things going, get my fingers warmed up. It is really cold. I don't know where you're listening from out there, but where we are here is really cold. I was born in the city of Lynn, home of the first turbine engine. And as if that wasn't enough, it is also the home of marshmallow fluff. You can travel the whole country, you'll never find a bigger fluff factory. I'm from Lynn, what can I say? People from Lynn just act this way. I don't talk slick like I'm from the Hant. I'm the son of a 30-year GE man. Don't be staring at me that way. I am from Lynn, what can I say? I used to hang around in Barry Park. That's illegal after it gets dark. I would stand on the bleachers where things got smoked and beer got chug lug bottles got broke. Later in the evening when the police come, 27 juveniles are on the run. Juveniles are running everywhere you see, jumping over fences, climbing in trees. But Dawn is too loaded to get away. His name is in the paper on the very next day. His mother and his father just can't believe he would publicly humiliate the family. I'm from Lynn, what can I say? People from Lynn act this way. I don't talk slick, that's what I said. I am not from Swampskin or Marblehead. Don't be staring at me that way. I am from Lynn, what can I say? On the corner of every street, somebody's cooking something greasy to eat. Deep fat is frying everywhere you look. The town is bound for the record books. A million sub shops open all night long. A socio-intestinal phenomenon. Still think that's the best line I ever wrote. I'm from Lynn, what can I say? People from Lynn eat this way. There's no room in my stomach for French cuisine. Give me a bag of cheese curls and a submarine. Julia Child, get out of my way. I'm from Lynn, what can I say? That's how you know when a song's been around too long, when it actually has dead people in it. I left Lynn 10 years ago. I didn't know where I was gonna go. 10 of my friends were leaning up against a bar and grill. 10 years later, they're leaning there still. Half of my friends who are not on the street are dead in jail or annoying me. And I'm from Lynn, what can I say? People from Lynn act this way. I don't talk slick, that's what I said. They won't even let me in the Marblehead. They're afraid I'll steal something, and I might.
Oh, and the crowd goes wild.
That was one of Larry Glick's favorite towns.
Larry Glick?
Remember Larry Glick?
Yeah.
He always, when people call from Lynn, you know.
Well, good. He had good taste in towns, I guess.
Well, you know,
I'm 5 generations here. My grandparents on the Greek side immigrated there. And the other parents grandparents came down from Nova Scotia to build houses there in the 20s, I guess. My parents are from there, and I lived there, my kids and my grandchildren, so we didn't get the memo that you were supposed to leave. Nobody told us. We stayed. We stayed there, and, you know, there's some signs of life there. Things are moving along. Oh, it's a good town.
Absolutely. So, be back in a moment.
If you want to stay alive this holiday season, when you drink, plan not to drive. We'll tell you the reason. You could lose your license and end up doing time. Pay thousands of dollars too in lawyers' fees and fines.
This holiday season, if you plan to drink, plan how to get home safely. Designate a driver or call a cab.
Make a plan before you go when your head is clear. Don't wait till you've had eggnog, hot wassail, or beer.
Brought to you by the Texas Department of Transportation.
My kids are both in their 20s now, so I've been telling audiences for the past few years the following sentence. My children are in their 20s, so pretty soon they are going to move away. All right, let's analyze what just happened here. Because that's the same thing that happens every time I say that. So my kids are in their 20s, pretty soon they're gonna move away, and about 30% of you people started laughing. And that always happens. I hired a detective and I did some research and I found out the answer. And I'm gonna explain to you why 30% of every audience thinks that that's so funny. People my age and younger, it seems reasonable to us that you would raise these people and then they would move away. You just look at it on paper and it makes sense. You bring them into the world, you send them to school, you keep food in their stomach, you put clothes on their back, you bail them out of jail, and then they live. But to people older than me, 50s and 60s, it is the funniest thing they ever heard. Honest to God, one time I was doing a show, there was a guy in about the 8th row in the aisle seat. He was an older guy, looked like he had a lot of teenager experiences. He had the big eyes like this, you know, the big black marks and the heavily medicated sort of glow about him. Looked like he might have had 3 daughters at one time, maybe. I was speculating. I said, my kids are in their 20s, pretty soon they're gonna move away. I look over and he's rolling around in the aisle. I thought he was having a heart attack. He wasn't having a heart attack, he was laughing and laughing. I'm like, what's so funny, Grampy? And he's wiping the tears away from his eyes. I'm like, what is so funny? He's like, you ridiculous little man. And I'm like, what? He's like, they never leave. And if they do leave, they come back. So at the end of the show, I was trying to break down the microphones and get out of there, and he came up to the stage and he wanted to talk to me. I already didn't like him. But I couldn't get away. And he said to me, I am a card-carrying member in good standing of the Cantankerous Old Man Society. And all of us members of this secret society, we have valuable knowledge and wisdom that if we ever chose to share it with you younger people, it would save you years. Did I say years? I meant decades of pain and suffering and agony and misery and living in hell. But we never do that because we're bored to death and you people are our entertainment. He said, but I'm feeling kind of generous tonight. So out of the goodness of my heart, I'm gonna give you the secret knowledge that you need to keep your children out of your house once they leave for the first time. And that's the first thing that you need to know, that they will actually leave once because they're stupid and they have no idea what it costs to live out there. And you have a very small window of opportunity to utilize this knowledge. And he put his arm around me in this mock paternal embrace. And he looked around to make sure that nobody would overhear the secret knowledge and wisdom. And he said, when your children leave home for the first time, are you listening to me? Let's say that this is your son leaving home for the first time. You need to go over to the window and listen. And there he is. He's going out the door. He's walking down the driveway. And he looks up to his dad in the window who's observing the whole scene. And he said, thanks a lot for raising me, dude. I'm going out to make my way in the world. Me and Jimmy and Joey and Johnny and Jamie and Jeremiah and Jonah and Jacob. We're all renting a 2-room apartment. It's gonna be called Party Central, dude. I'm out of here. And then he goes out and he gets into the back seat of his friend Joey's, oh, let's call it a 1993 jalopy of some kind. He gets in the back seat, and at that moment, you have to listen for the sound of freedom. Do you know what the sound of freedom is? Of course you don't. I listened to your whole show. You don't know anything. Surprise, you can cross the street and not get hit by a car. The sound of freedom is the sound that a Budweiser can make when it opens up in the back seat of Joey's jalopy. And you have to listen for the sound of freedom. And when you hear the sound, well, probably in Joey's back seat, it sounds more like this. And after you hear the sound of freedom, and you see the one working tail light flickering down the street, at the exact moment that one working tail light turns the corner and gets out of your line of sight, you have to sell your house!
Welcome back to What's Happening. I'm Aaron.
I'm Mike. You're listening to WMFO 91.5 FM. We are in WMFO.org streaming. And this is What's Happening. We're here every Sunday from 5 to 6 o'clock. I'm Mike.
And I'm D.
Don White.
So, Don, let everybody know, I know you have a gig coming up.
Well, yeah, I'll be playing at Club Passim in Harvard Square, a great legendary folk club there. I've been playing, I think, for 25 or 26 years annually, so I always look forward to it, kick off the new year with it. And hopefully folks who are listening here will consider coming out and having a few laughs, kicking off the new year with some laughter. And my friend John Frullo is opening the show, and a friend of mine who sings on many of my recordings, her name is Christina Thompson Lively. She's going to come down and sing, and then generally my friends will show up, and there'll be a lot of improvisation and people, coming up on stage and different things happening. It's always a great show, so I want to make sure we help get the word out about that. It is Saturday, January 6th.
Just a week away.
Club Passim right there in Harvard Square.
Cambridge.
Formerly known as Club 47.
Right. That's right. Wow. That's true.
That ages somebody in the room.
It's a great club. I mean, what they've done there is just fantastic. They have music there every night of the week, and they have a school upstairs, and it's great. And they were going broke there for a while, and they brought some new folks in, and just breathed a bunch of new life into it, and it's been going like freight train ever since. So it's a great, great, great place and something worth supporting and all that.
How do you go about writing your material for your comedy?
I pull it out of my life. Generally, I've just been documenting my life. I've been married since 1978, so a lot of the stories and stuff. Oh, well, thank you. I wasn't fishing for applause there, but I'll take it.
Say a shout out to your wife.
She's with my grandchildren now. I'm sure she's not listening to me. But, we've been together a long time. And so the stories are, when my kids were teenagers, a lot of the comedy especially came out of that. But, I don't know how to write about things that I'm not experiencing. I always admire people who can do that, write a song about the Civil War and have it seem right, but mostly I just... I'm documenting what the trail that I'm on with, hopefully with a sense of humor or something, something meaningful to say about it.
But who better to write about what's happening to you than you?
Well, that's a good point there, Aaron.
Any advice you have for other musicians out there who are up and coming on how to write or how to document their lives so it fits?
That's a hard question.
it's everybody that's coming up. I mentor a fair amount of kids, and I teach a lot. People in their 20s, you know, they're kids to me. And I see the fear in their eyes. You know, they want to do it, and they think they have something to say, and they know that the odds are stacked against them. So I think my advice would not be about how to document your life, but it would be about how to make fans. Like, if you can figure out what you can do to make fans, which seems like a big, it's almost impossible when you first think about it. It's a frustrating thing to think about. But if you think that you are one, just realize that you are a fan of somebody, and you deconstruct your relationship with the person that you're a fan of. What is this person doing to me? Why will I go every year and see them? Why will I pay whatever the ticket price is? Why will I bring my friends, even if they never heard of them, and just guarantee them that they'll love it? You know, and you start, then you can realize that you are a fan, and somebody is creating in you what you need to create in other people. And that still seems like a big thing, but at least it demystifies it. And basically, usually what it is they connect with you somehow. Maybe it's because they're a great musician, or maybe it's the stories they tell, or the way they make you feel at the show, or the songs that they write. But somehow, among all the musicians and people that you know, there's a handful, maybe two or three, that really get to you. And if you can deconstruct your relationship with that artist, then you have at least a place to begin when you're thinking about what it is that you can do with your tools to develop, to try to connect in a similar way to people. Without fans, there is no career in this business. It doesn't matter how good you play. There's a ton of good players. You have to put something into the world that people can brag about when they go back to work on Monday. You know, like, I had the best time at this show. Whatever that means, however that is. You know, I know it's vague and everything, but I sort of had a handle on that when I was trying to figure it out, and it helped. I wasn't able to do it for years after I understood that it needed to be done. But eventually I figured, you know, this combination of being funny and heartfelt and, you know, trying to write things that were meaningful in a way that didn't sound like everybody else, and just different things that I experimented with. And then eventually there turned out to be this sort of core fan group. And then they bring other people in for you. You don't need a record company or somebody to do it for you. If you have a core group of fans, they will slowly, you know, it takes time, they will build it up for you. Then, of course, you have to deliver every show. You have to, even if you're sick or you don't feel good or whatever, you have to try to get them to a place where they want to bring somebody else the next time. So that's my advice. I know it's a tall order, but that's the only way I know how to do it.
So when you were first starting out, or even younger, who were your influences? Who made you want to pick up a guitar and feel the music?
You know, there'll be a long answer to that question, so I'll just sort of hone it down to the people who I thought I could probably do that, you know? And there's a couple of them. The first one was Loudon Wainwright. Like, I had that first album, his guitar is a little out of tune, and you know, and I just thought, you know, he's not doing anything fancy, but I love this record. And he's basically just interesting, funny, and not like anybody else. So that was the first inkling. Then I felt like John Prine was that way too. Simple chords, but really interesting songs, funny and heartfelt. And then I think more than anybody else was Arlo Guthrie. And like, I got to, I've opened for him a few times, but just this year, he came to one of my shows and sat through the whole show. I got to talk to him and just tell him how powerful what he did was to me. Like, he could talk for the whole side of an album and be funny and engaging. You know, that stuff about the pickle song and Alice's Restaurant and all that. And he made it look like anyone could do it. And I was 10 years into trying to do it before I realized that nobody can do it, only he could do it. And that's really hard and challenging. So I got to tell him that and thank him for it. So I would say those guys in particular, Loudon Wainwright, John Prine and Arlo Guthrie, all of them. And if you look at them all, they're all capable of being really funny, but they can break your heart to all of them. So I owe a great deal of gratitude to all of them. And I'm fortunate now to have met Arlo and some other folks that I looked up to over the years.
Do you think coming from a city, urban environment has changed your perspective, maybe versus other people that are doing what you're doing?
Well, what I would say to you is don't like wherever you're from, that's an interesting place. You know, if you can, you have to figure out a way to write about it in a way that doesn't sound like everybody else from that place. That's the only thing. But yes, being from a town like Lynn, you know, my dad was a rigger at the GE. My mother worked in a factory. So I have some edge on me. And I think over the years that has helped a little bit, because it's not, maybe people aren't used to seeing folk singers with that kind of urban edge on them. You know, maybe. I'm guessing about that. But if you're from, you know, a suburb or any place, don't, you know, that place is cool and what you experience growing up is interesting. It's how you deliver it that matters. It's you have to be able to write the songs and tell the stories in a way that's not the same as everybody else. That's all. It's comedy is that way. You have to see it from a different angle than everyone else is seeing it in order to find the humor in it.
Do you have another song for us?
Sure. Would you play one for me?
Okay.
This is the title song from my CD. It's called More Alive. And let me just set it up if I could. So this song I wrote, I got inspired to write this at my mother's funeral. I was staring at the wall and I was having this thought. The thought was, I'm not sure I can live through this. I hadn't given much thought to what it would be like to be at my mother's funeral, but it was harder than I thought. And I was just thinking, man, this is hard. I'm not sure I'm made out of whatever you need to be made out of to get through this. And I looked across the room and I saw her sister. And her sister at the time was probably 82. And she's a punk and a wise guy and a flirt. And she likes to pinch people on the butt and tell dirty jokes and cause trouble and dance and drink. And she's just the most dangerous 82-year-old in the world. And everyone wants to be near her because you just know something wild's going to happen and you just want to be there. And I had an epiphany, or kind of a half an epiphany. And what I thought was, you know, what happened to me once and I thought was going to kill me has happened to her 30 times. She was 82. I just made a list in my mind of all the people I knew that she had to say goodbye to, her parents, her aunts and uncles. She was at her second sister's funeral. Her husband died. Her son and nephew killed himself. All this stuff. If you're going to live to be 80 or 90, you're going to have to go to a lot of funerals. And what I think what healthy people, older people learn, what I was thinking, was that they learn how to mourn some appropriate amount of time and then come back into life with more hunger for living, more vitality, more mischief, more willingness to do what you're not supposed to do. It's almost as if healthy people come back from loss the way that the people they lost would want them to. You know, if you're gone and you can't squeeze the life out of any more minutes, you certainly would encourage, if you could, the people who are left behind to go ahead and cause some trouble and do the most that you can to enjoy your time there. So I wrote this song. It's a title song from the CD, and singing on it is, the background harmonies are all done by this woman, Christina Thompson Lively, who's going to be at the show on Saturday at Club Passim in Harvard Square in Cambridge to sing this song and some others with me too. So there you go.
I lost my mother, I lost my father. Well, I really didn't lose them. I know exactly where they both are. It's not like they went for a walk, took a wrong turn and both got lost. It just hurts less to say I lost them than to say they're dead. Betty May is 82, having more fun than me and you. All she wants to do is laugh and sing. She's the biggest flirt I ever seen. Still flutters through the baby blues like she did when she was 22. So much mischief in those eyes, I never seen someone more alive. More alive, side of all the sorrow and the trouble in your life. There are so many sad goodbyes in a long and well-lived life. If they don't break you, they can make you more alive. When my mother died, I was so smashed up inside. I was crying like a baby. I thought the pain might kill me. And Betty said, son, you won't believe how many loved ones I buried. My father, sister, my brother, my son, my husband, and my mother. And every time I lose a friend, think I'm never gonna laugh again. I lay around and watch bad TV till this feeling comes over me. And then I put some music on and play my favorite song. Dance around my living room like I did when I was 22. Shake loose of that pain inside on the day. I am going to be more alive, more alive, more alive, waiting on the other side of all the sorrow and the trouble in your life. There are so many sad goodbyes in a long and well-lived life. If they don't break you, they can make you more alive. She said, go ahead, feel your pain, watch bad TV for days. But when you're ready to come out and play, you'll come see Betty May. And we'll put some music on and play your favorite song. Dance around my living room like we both were 22, and shake loose of that pain inside on the day when you decide. Not only will you survive, you are going to be more alive, more alive, waiting on the other side of all the sorrow. So many sad goodbyes in a long and well-lived life. If they don't break you in time, they can make you more.
You listen to What's Happening. I'm Mike.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm D.
Don White over here.
And your music's great.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely.
Thanks for doing what you can to get the music out there. I appreciate it. It's hard to get radio these days, you know, with the consolidation of media and all. It's great that you guys are still doing it and give people a chance to hear people that, you know, aren't being pushed by a big company or anything. It's a noble endeavor. I'm grateful to you.
No, thank you. Do you have another live song for us?
Sure. Here, this one's new. I'll send this one out to my wife. We're old now, and we used to go out all the time, but that's because we had no furniture and nothing to sit on, and now we have these, like, you know, everything we bought to make our life easier, this is just it's a trick to keep us from going out, you know. Like my couch, it like puts its arms around me and tells me it loves me, and you know, Dawn, are you okay? Do you, you know, like, is your back sore? Can I get you something? So whenever people come out, like they're going to for a Saturday night at Club Passim in Cambridge, I'm grateful to them. So this is a song of me just pleading with my wife to peel herself out of that comfortable couch and let's go do something while our bodies will still permit it. And I know we're rolling toward the end of this, so if we don't get to do it toward the end, thank you all you guys for what you're doing here, and thanks to everyone at the station here. So I've got $300 bills that are all brand new. Let's start again. I've got $300 bills that are all brand new. They're begging me to think of something cool to do. How about I take you downtown and spend them all on you? I don't want to stay home tonight. We have worked so hard for so many years, built a home, a life, a family, and two careers. Saved our money for the future, now the future is here. I don't want to stay home tonight. Can't stay home again tonight. I can't stay home again tonight. I can't stay home. I can't stay home. I need you and me. How it used to be. Every week on Friday night, there is so much history that only we can see. Can't stay home again tonight. Me and Michael, Johnny, Richard, Ruthie, and Joan all had bouts with cancer last year, you know. If cancer was a man, I would punch him in the throat. I don't want to stay home tonight. Time isn't sentimental. It doesn't seem to care about your plans or your hopes and dreams. It just keeps track of all your minutes, then it wipes the slate clean. I don't wanna stay home tonight. I can't stay home again tonight. I can't stay home again tonight. I can't stay home. I can't stay home. I can't. I can't. I need you. How it used to be. Every week on Friday night, there is so much history that only we can see. Can't stay home again tonight. Well, I know we can't party like we did before. Can't stay out till 4 in the morning no more. But the house is paid off and the kids are all grown. What the hell are we even working for? Let's take a nap, take our inhalers, take a multivitamin, then go out and hear some music with all of our friends who didn't die from the way we used to party back then. I don't wanna stay home tonight. Isn't sentimental, it doesn't seem to care about your plans or your hopes and dreams. Just keeps track of all your minutes, then it wipes the slate clean. I don't wanna stay home tonight. I can't stay home again tonight. I can't stay home again tonight. Can't stay home. Can't stay home. I can't. I can't. I need you and me. How it used to be. Every week on Friday night, there is so much history that only we can see. Can't stay home. Can't stay home. I can't stay home again tonight.
Very, very nice.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Do you have one more for us to go out with? Maybe. We've still got about...
Jeez, sorry. Yeah, let me just tune up a second.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
You're listening to What's Happening. You're on WMFO in Medford, 91.5 FM. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Daryl.
I'm Mike.
And Don White
oh,
is tuning.
I'm Don White tuning my guitar. But I'm trying to concentrate. So here, this is a quick one. It's this is a song for everybody out there who thinks that it's too late for them to develop a skill to play guitar, paint, photography, something. I my argument for art is that it gives you a better life. That if you build birdhouses or paint or sculpt or some whatever, don't let anybody tell you that you're not good enough. Just do it because it's fun and it's good. But what happens is you get to be in your 50s and 60s, everybody else's world is closing down and getting smaller, which isn't necessarily bad, it's just the way it is. But if you have a creative outlet in your life, then it reverses that. Your world expands, because at a time when everybody sort of settled into their job and their life and their one vacation a year and all that stuff, you are meeting other people who are interested in what you're doing, and you're expanding your mind and learn how to create new things. So this is a little pep talk for everybody out there to find something to do. Buy a camera, start taking pictures, do something. You know, it'll give you'll never make any money on it, believe me. But you will have an expanding life. I can't believe that anybody wouldn't want a life that was expanding when everybody else is contracting. And so here we go. Whoa. Maybe we're gonna do it. Everybody in their cars, in a million mile traffic jam, trying to get to their jobs. You there with your bright light, hiding in your little room, with your guitar and your pencil, writing your secret tune. Go light, go light, go light the world on fire. This is your day, it's your time. Go light the world on fire. In the first part, if you learn what you love to do. In the middle part, if you do it a lot, till it becomes a part of you.